This is such an honor for me to be here. I've been involved with the grieving folks for forever, and I need to let you know. The very most important thing you need to do is I need you to look to the left, would you please? Then I need you to look to the right. Then I need you to turn around and look at somebody's back of their head. Oh, there you go. And then you're going to turn around and look forward at the back of somebody's head. Now, I do need to let you know that everybody here is here because we're grieving. And today, they've asked me to come and to visit with you about the grieving process. Now, I need to take you back in time about 11 years ago. I'm going to take you back in time 30 years ago. I came out of graduate school 30 years ago, and as I did so, a good friend of mine, his name was Dick Myers, he asked me, he was, come in, he was a mortician. And Brother Myers, he asked me if I would come and start doing grieving groups for him, and I said to him, you know, Dick, I really don't know anything about it. And he says, don't worry about that. My wife Gloria will be your guide, and she knows everything about grieving. And so I started and I went and I did a grieving group for the Myers Mortuary. After I was all done, I think Sister Myers realized she had a hopeless case, and she said, you know, Kent, we really like you, but what we really need you to do is we need you to go over to Denver in Colorado there, and we need you to go through the grieving school because they'll teach you all about grieving. And so guess what I did? You know, my sweet little wife allowed me to go, and every other weekend for about 6-8 weeks, I went over to Colorado into the school for grieving and became a certified grieving counselor. 11 years ago now, actually, this summer, my mother passed away. I remember leaving the hospital, brothers and sisters. I remember leaving the hospital, and as I left the hospital, I said to myself, I've been doing this for 20 years. I know how to grieve. Besides that, I'm a paid professional. This isn't going to be so hard. And then what happened is I crashed and I burned and I fell apart. And I thought, people who lose their mothers, especially when you're 50 years old, you don't fall apart, but I did. And I learned a couple of things, and I actually put it on your handout there. I learned two things, and I'd like to give you some definitions, because what I want to do today is I want to help you and prepare you and help you through this journey that you have to go through. Now, before I tell you the definitions, I need to let you know that when you go through this grieving process that you're going through, the first year is horrible. Can I tell you that? I need to let you know it's horrible. And the second year is worse. Talk about hope, right? I just gave you the hope. No. But what I have found is that as we go through this process, the reason that most people struggle the second year is because they remember what the first year is like. The first year comes along and it slaps you up constantly at the side of the face, and we're going to learn about that here in just a few minutes. But what happens then is the second year comes around, you remember getting whapped upside the head. And that's what makes it more painful. What I want to be helping you to do here today is to be able to grieve, because we are going to have to grieve. It's one of those processes that you have to go through. Now, just a little side road here to give you a little picture, a little story. My mother passed away 11 years ago. 3 days after we buried my mother, my father was over to my sister's house, and he was having lunch with her. He got up from having lunch. He gave her a little kiss on the forehead, according to my sister. And then he said to my sister, Sue, I thought you might need to know that I think I've grieved long enough. And I think what I better start doing is dating. Now, my father was 86 years old. 3 days. 3 days. Okay. I really, really hope and pray that none of you do that. Okay. And when I talked to him a couple weeks later, I said, I understand that you decided to date, Dad. And he says, well, yeah. what's wrong with that? And I says, well, don't you think you ought to grieve a little bit? Oh, hell, Kent. I'm an old man. I haven't got much time. I thought I better get dating. Now, the problem was, let me whop you upside the head. Come, you guys can have these reserve seats. Reserve seats. Come sit where you are. There's some seats back in the back, right back there. There's some seats right here. I'm not very much of joy. Listen to them. They will tell you I'm not much of joy. So what happened is my father went forward. He remarried about 7-8 months after his marriage. My new stepmother called me on the phone and she said, Kent, something's wrong with your father. Okay, and I said, yeah, I know that. And she said, no, that's not what I mean. She says, he's crying all the time. Now, guess what my father was now doing 1.5 years after my mother passed away? And it was a very humbling and a wonderful experience. And even though I should have referred him to somebody, because you're not supposed to do therapy on your own family members, I loved working with my father as I helped him through the process that you're going through. Now, going back to my definitions. Definition that I came up with, because you see, I lost my mother. And what I did not comprehend until my mother passed away, and you guys see how it fits with losing your husbands and your wives? When I lost that, I lost all my hopes and all my dreams that were core to my existence. Now, I know for you young women, you're all young, okay, because I'm old. Okay, from the very beginnings of your time, if you can go back to when you were little children, you dreamed of being wives and dreamed of being mothers, didn't you? And what is more core to your existence than that husband that you were attached to? For you guys, you probably didn't think about it much. You thought about other things, but you didn't think about that much until you got off into your early 20s. Some of you are as old as I am. You may have married earlier. But when you married, understand that they became core to your existence. And when I talk about hopes and I talk about dreams, okay, hope means to look forward with anticipation or excitement to something you believe you can have. Okay, you dream about your future. Now, just like Brother Barlow, I have not lost my wife. Okay, but I have to let you know, I don't hope and dream about her dying. There's nothing in my mind that says I can hardly wait to plan her funeral. There's nothing there. Okay, but what I do have is I have hopes and I have dreams, and I'm thinking about my children, I'm thinking about my grandchildren, and I'm thinking about the days that they will get married and the days that they will have their missions and go on these calls, and then someday Susan and I will take off on this wonderful mission ourselves, or maybe 3 or 4 missions ourselves. And then the problem then comes along, because you see, Susan has it all planned out. Okay, because what she says, honey, we're going to live to be 80, and then we're going to go rent a red Mustang convertible. And then we're going to do a Thelma and Louise off the dam. I live up by Pineview Reservoir in northern Utah. Now, I had to go watch Thelma and Louise, which isn't a really good show, to figure out what it was that Thelma and Louise did, okay? But it's one of those things, brothers and sisters, is that you lose your hopes and your dreams. And then I wrote a definition on grieving. The definition on grieving says, it's the process we go through that helps us let go of old hopes and dreams that we can no longer have. And it helps us establish new hopes and dreams that are more attainable. In other words, even though spiritually your spouse will be there, and I promise you they will. You know, we've had many general authorities that said we will be so surprised when we get on the other side at how much God sends his angels to help us. and they walk with us and they guide us and they direct us, and we'll be able to know all about that. He promises us that we will. Okay? But they won't be here in the touching sense. They won't be here in the touching sense. Last week I visited with a little family who lost their father just a couple of months previous. This little daughter is getting married next Friday. And what she said to me was, "Brother Alan, I know I should be grateful that I had a dad, but oh, how I wanted him to witness my marriage. Oh, how I wanted to dance with him." Okay, she's lost a hope and a dream that she can no longer have. The next part of it is very important, of that definition, because it says to you, okay, that there's nothing in life that prepares you. Oops, is that what it really says? Okay. Oh, it says it's an unlearned process. Yes, I do. If you'll pen those out. It's an unlearned process. Now, brothers and sisters, what I want you to know is that there is nothing in life that prepares you for going through the grieving process. How's that? Okay, there's some of you who have lost mothers and fathers. I'm here to tell you it didn't prepare you to lose your husband or your wife. Okay, there's some of you here that may have lost children, but it still didn't prepare you to lose your husband or your wife. I was a paid professional. I had gone through grieving with hundreds and hundreds of people, now past the thousands. But guess what it did not prepare me to do? The next one is even a little harder, because the next part of the definition says that it's a feeling process, not a thinking process. It's a feeling process. Guess what all of you want to do? You all want to think it through. And how you doing? Is that working for you? Most of the time it doesn't work for you because there's no logic to it. Most of us say, "Why did my spouse have to pass away? Why did he have to go? Why did she have to go? Why couldn't I have gone first?" Some of you think, "Well, I just want to see them and I want to be around them and I want to feel them close by me all the time." And some of you may, but there's many that may not. And you try to make logic of everything that goes on. And what we find is there is no logic in when Heavenly Father calls your spouses home. There's no logic to it. And so what we want to do now is I want to help you so that you can understand that this is a process that we go through. And what kind of process is it? It's a feeling process. You guys, and it's so good to have you guys here today, because you probably doubled the amount of guys that were here last year. All right, just so you know. Okay, I think we had 3 last year, and look how many were here today. Okay, I made up that just a little bit. Now, the process that we go through, I want you to flip your pages over. We're going to talk about that side first. When you go through the grieving process, the very first thing that happens is you experience trauma. Is there anybody here that it was not? No, don't raise your hands. Okay, understand that it's a traumatic experience. Okay, for those of you that lost your spouses and they passed away, it was pretty traumatic. For those of you that lost your spouses in an accident, that was more traumatic. If any of you here lost your spouse to suicide, that's the most traumatic. Those are the top 3 traumas, the top 3 stressors in life, according to people who studied stress. Understand, it was pretty traumatic. When you have trauma, what you have to look at is that it causes stress. Is there anybody here who it did not cause stress? I want you to look around, please. There is no hands up. It causes stress. What then happens to us is that stress then makes our minds go numb. I'm not going to ask if any of you have numb brains, but I am going to ask, is there anybody here who has short-term memory loss? I want you to look around. There's only 4 hands that did not come up. okay?
And you're not a widow.
So, what?
And they can't remember what
you just said. That's okay. I hope you all heard that. So you can't remember what you just said. But our minds go numb. Now, Heavenly Father, when He created you, He created that your minds would go numb. How does that grab you? Okay, what we know, because we study this stuff now, is that your brain has a chemical in it called dopamine. Okay, not that you're dopey, but your brain literally has a chemical called dopamine, and dopamine has three purposes. Purpose number one is it allows you to have pleasurable experiences. So for those of you that have jumped out of airplanes, you probably had a little more dopamine than I've got, okay? But it allows you to have those pleasurable experiences. The most important part of dopamine, though, is that it's the chemical that helps you take short-term memory and take it into your brain and create long-term memory. It's also the chemical that goes in and retrieves long-term memory, and it brings it back to your short-term memory so that you can use it. Now, the experts who study this, okay, there's your brain. I just took the top of your head off. Here's your front lobes. What they say is that when you have trauma, your brain goes numb so that as information comes in, what it does is it takes all the drama and it scatters it throughout your brain. Isn't that nice of that to do that? Okay, normally when you have information comes in, it takes it in and it just puts it right there. Okay, most of you probably drive. Your brain knows how to drive because it goes into long-term memory and it pulls out how you go about driving. But with trauma, it scatters it around. Now, it does that because the experts tell us that the trauma, if it housed trauma in one spot, it would kill you. Okay? The trauma of being born would have killed you. How many of you here remember being born? You do? And she's the youngest of the group. The rest of us are numb. Now, what happens then is when your brain is in that state, realize that it goes out and it scatters all memories, and it creates in you what we as therapists call triggers. Okay, triggers are emotional memories. They're created by your senses. Your senses are touch and taste and sights and sounds and smell. And as those triggers come out, there you are, and you're driving down the road, okay? And all of a sudden, your favorite song comes on that you had when you were dating. Guess what just happened? Bam, a trigger went off. You're walking through the mall, ladies, and all of a sudden you smell the same kind of cologne that your husband used to wear. Guess what just went off? Guys, you're driving down the road and the car passes you that looks just like your wife's. Bam, guess what just went off? The hardest part we know in this grieving process is when you go through holidays. Whoa. Now, why is holidays so hard? We have tons and tons of memories, but even more important than all those memories that you have, when you go through and you look at your senses of touch and sight and smell and sounds and taste, guess what you're using? You're using all those senses. And so as Thanksgiving comes on and you walk into a room, what happens? As Christmas comes. Any of you have your first Christmas yet? There's a bunch of you that have had your first Christmas. How was it? They're going like this. Triggers go off. When a trigger goes off, it creates anxiety. Anybody here feel anxiety once in a while? All the time. It's happening because why? Because of those triggers. And anxiety is, comes into three parts. We call it the fight and flight syndrome. And I'm going to add another one that I see over and over and over again, is we freeze. In the fight mode, anger comes out. I know probably a number of you have gone online and said, what's the stages of grieving? And how many of you have read Anger's one of them? Okay, it's there. The flight is I just want to run away. How many of you want to just disappear and run away? Yeah, we're there. Okay. The free says I just zone out. A lot of people zone out. They'll sit in front of a TV set. They'll stare out a window. They'll sit in their chair and they'll rock. A lot of people zone out because they just want to sleep. Okay. For those that aren't really strict in the gospel and those that are of other faith, they use a lot of alcohol and drugs to zone out. And as we zone out and we go into the flight and fight mode, what happens to us is that we misread life's cues. So those of you that have experienced your first Christmas, realize that the Christmas before your spouse passed away, Christmas was great and it was wonderful and we could hardly wait for it to happen and we had wonderful prizes and we had packages and we decorated the trees and we had the kids over and the grandkids came and life was wonderful and exciting and fun. Now this time when it come around, how was your Christmas? Miserable. What else? Lonely. What else? All of a sudden, guess what we're misreading? And guess what it now recreates? Okay, Mother's Day, Father's Day. Most of my people say when their husbands have passed away and their fathers have passed away, I can't go to Father's Day to church on Sunday because I can't sit there and hear the song of those little kids say, "It's so glad when Daddy comes home." Because Daddy's not coming home. And we misread those cues. And let's send this down and around, would you please? We misread those cues. And then what happens is it stresses us out. It makes our minds go numb. And this is the process that you're going through over and over and over and over and over again. Does it, any of this make sense? Is there anybody here who has questions?
When you said misread life cues, what
are not life's cue says is Christmas, for example, is a happy time. That's a life cue. Happy. Most people are very, very happy. Now what happens is it comes at us. It's not happy anymore. And we now read it as what? As unhappy. So as you're going down this road the first year, what I want you to look at is that you're having hundreds of triggers go off and sometimes hundreds of triggers daily. You can walk into your home and you can see a picture. You can walk into your home and see a pair of shoes. You can walk into your home and smell something. Okay? And the triggers go off, and now they send us down that road, and it's not really a happy road. And it takes us and sets us back. Yes?
On your paper, you're identifying as shock, not stress.
I have another thing, and I think my secretary misdid that, but it is stress. You can call it shock if you'd like because it's very closely related, but I'd say write down the word stress there. Okay, now, what I'd like to do now is I'd like to give you some things that you can literally do, and I've got to talk really, really fast so that we can get you through that. The thing that I want you to do now is I want you to grab onto a new concept. I will have you know that there will be some of you who will challenge me, and that's okay. Okay, what I want you to do is listen, take the challenge, okay, try what I'm asking you to do, and if you can prove me wrong, then I will give you your money back. Kim, did they charge for my class? Okay, I will give you your money back. In fact, I'll double it. Okay, now here's the concept. The concept, brothers and sisters, is that you went down this road and you lost your spouse. The concept is that you lost your agency. Is that a weird concept? How many of you here? No, don't want you to show your hand because some of you may have wanted your spouse to die, but I doubt it. Okay? My life has told me that there's very, 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 very few. I've had maybe one or two in 30 years of therapy that really wanted their spouse to die. And they wanted their spouse to die because they'd been in so much pain for so many years that they begin to pray that Heavenly Father would call them home. And so even though they passed away and it was a hard thing, What I want you to grab onto is that for 99% of you, realize that it wasn't your choice that your spouse passed away. And even for those of you that was going through and your spouse suffered horribly, you would have never wanted your spouse to suffer horribly, and you would have wanted them to live as long as you lived, and then either do a Thelma and Louise off the dam, or even better, to have one of you pass away one night, and sometime during the night or the morning you pass away so that you go together. Okay? But I want you to know you lost your agency. And for the vast majority of, guess what you haven't learned how to do? You haven't learned to take your agency back. Now, I want to give you just a little brief synopsis of how I learned what I'm about to teach you, because you're never going to read what I'm going to teach you in a book because I haven't written it. How's that? The first 17 years of my practice as a therapist, I worked with only children and young girls who had been sexually abused. How's that? What happened to me, because 12 days a week, I was working really close to 50, 55 hours a week because the need was so huge. And nobody ever come to see me because they wanted to. How'd you like my job? Okay, nobody came to see me because they were happy that I got sexually abused last night or last week or last month. It was a hard, hard job. The reality of it all, brothers and sisters, is I became depressed. Okay, I'll let you know that I became depressed. Because of pride, I didn't go see a doctor. Because of pride, I won't go see a therapist. And my sweet little wife came to me one night after I had gone in and taken my clothes off and climbed into bed and pulled the covers up over my head. She came in and she said, "Honey, either you get this fixed or I'm going to commit you to the hospital." Now, guess what I didn't want to do? I didn't want to. My sweet little mother taught me a concept when I was growing up. The concept said, when you get stuck in life, you go back to basics. The Allen family had basics. The basics are read your scriptures, pray, fast and pray, get to the temple as often as you can, and serve other people. And so guess what I dug into? I dug into my basics. How many of you have been reading the Book of Mormon since the loss of your spouse? How many of you have found, like I did, that everybody in the Book of Mormon is depressed? It's true. You know, good old Lehi and his sweet wife, they got so depressed they couldn't even get out of bed. Okay, Nephi. Okay, he woke up every morning and his pillow was wet. What does that sound like? And in his mind, he said, "Oh, what a wretched man I am." What does that sound like? Now, brothers and sisters, I could go through the Book of Mormon and I can give you an example of every prophet being depressed. Sorry about what the Brother Bartle says, that Moroni was not depressed. I can tell you, yes, he was. Because I know where it says in the scriptures that he was depressed. As I went through that process, I went through the Book of Mormon and I didn't feel a whole lot better. I'm going to be honest, because I didn't catch what they were trying to say. I got into the Doctrine and Covenants, and somewhere in the 50th sections, that sections, okay, that there was a scripture that popped out at me, and it blew me away, because it says, "And the light will chase away the darkness." And I had a minivan, a little mini, you know, thank you. I couldn't remember what it was because of this. Okay, when I had that aha moment, what happened is my mind went back to being a little 4 or 5 year old boy. Okay, I was alone in my bedroom at my mother and father's home, and it was lightning, and it was thunder, and it was dark, and I was scared to death. And I remember in that little vision, that little dream that I had of that I was screaming for my mother. My mother came to the door. And the light was on in the hall. And I remember in that little dream that as the door opened, guess what happened to the darkness in my room? Brothers and sisters, it went away. The light will chase away the darkness. And I come up with this concept that I now want to teach you. I want to give you 6 steps in chasing away the darkness. Okay? to getting your agency back. And here's how it goes. Step number one is you have to recognize when your agency is gone. Now, I hate to be blunt, but I'm just going to be blunt and be very, very quick with this. What you do when you to find out how your agency is gone is tune into your bodies. Your body will tell you when it's gone. A few years ago, I was working with a young lady from one of the counties that come close around me, and this little lady had been a recent newlywed. She's a little 24-year-old girl, cutest little thing. She was a little nurse, and she had gotten married. She moved into the county that her husband lived in, and one morning she was out jogging the trails, okay? A guy jumped out of the bushes with a gun, drug her into the bushes, and he raped her 3 times. Now, as we proceeded with her therapy, I'm teaching her now what I'm teaching you. And I said to her, how does it make you feel when you think about what happened to you? And she said, it makes me feel crappy. Okay, when you feel crappy, guess what's gone? Your agency. When you're sad, when you're lonely, when you feel abandoned, when you feel rejected, when you're frustrated. All of those negative feelings that we feel, brothers and sisters, when you feel them, guess what's gone? Your agency. Isn't that a weird thing? Now, let's show you how to get it back. Step number two says, you decide how long you want to feel that way. Now, isn't that a bizarre thought that you guys can control how you feel? But guess what I know? Okay, I know that you can choose how long you want to feel that way. The reason I know that is because I've taught this now to thousands of people. Okay, I do it myself, and I've never had one person come and prove me wrong. I've had people at the conference last year that says, you're full of it, and he really did say that. Then he went home, he tried it, and I run into him in January at another grieving conference, and he come up to me, and he said, I tried and tried and tried, Kent, to prove you wrong, and guess what I could not do? It worked. It works every time. You decide how long you want to feel that way. Now, under step two or three steps. Number one, allow yourself to feel. Grieving is what kind of a process? A feeling process. So allow yourself to feel. If you want to be sad, I want you to be sad. If you want to be mad, I want you to be mad. Understand it is not a sin to feel. If it was a sin, then our Savior would not have been perfect, and neither would our Father in heaven, because in the Scriptures, guess what? It constantly, especially the Old Testament, what do you read about it?
I'm sorry, I was thinking
of 42 she-bears. Okay. I don't know about those. You'll have to come share with me after. Okay, but the reality, brothers and sisters, is that it's okay to have your feelings, and it is not a sin. Heavenly Father wants you to have them. Okay? B says, literally choose how long you want to feel that way, and then C says it has to be in real time. Real time comes in seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years, decades, and centuries. And I don't know what comes after centuries, because I don't know if any of you will live that long. Okay? You decide. And then what you do is you go to step three. So what happens is you come out of the process, excuse me, and you have a trigger go off, and you're feeling bad. And what you'll say to yourself, you'll say, I want to feel like this for 15 minutes. And now you're going to cut the time in half, and this is why. Oops. Okay, you cut the time in half because of a concept. The concept says that you can go down this line right here, and you can have 8,747 positives. You can have a trigger go off, and just like that, guess what happens to your positives? They're gone. And guess what you're thinking about? We're thinking about the tough times. That's what we're doing. We're thinking about, oh, this hurts. Oh, this is painful. Oh, how I miss him or her. We're thinking about that. And now what we're doing is we're going down the negative side. The negative side, brothers and sisters, does not work the same as the positive. The experts who study this stuff say it's 7 times more powerful. In other words, you have to have 7 positives to replace a negative. I'm not going to give it that much credit. The heck with Satan. What I do know, though, is that I'm going down that line and I cannot snap my fingers and be positive. Can't do it. Okay? Every minute I go down that line, it's going to take me at least that much time to get back to neutral before I can even start to build. And so what happens then, brothers and sisters, is you've got 7.5 minutes coming. You got 7.5 minutes getting back to neutral, and there's your 15 minutes. All right? Now, I'm wanting you to take your grieving, which some of you grieve for days and days and days and days and weeks and months, okay? And what I'm wanting you to do is I'm wanting you to shorten the time every day that you grieve. You can go ahead and have 20 15-minute segments if you choose and desire. If you want to be sad all day long, that's okay, because now whose choice is it? It's yours. And when you have your agency, guess what I find? Is that life gets better because it's my choice. Where everything before was causing it because of the triggers, when a trigger goes off now, guess what I choose? Now, in my life, you have to understand, I use this concept probably 10 to 15 times a day, at least. All right? Then you go to step four. Step four says, as you set a timer. Okay, how many of you folks have one of these, and I'm just trying to get my phone out. How many of you folks have one of these? How many of you know how to use it? Okay, if you don't know how to use it, I have a 3-year-old grandson that will teach you how. All right, he taught me how to use something that was really cool. He said, let me put it so it sounds, set the timer for 3 minutes.
I can't set the timer for a specific time.
Oh.
Should I set it? Okay.
Give me 3.5 minutes.
Okay, just tell me what you want to be reminded about.
Nah. I don't know how to use it. But his mother taught him how to use that so that he could set his own timer when he went into timeout. I thought, whoa, that's cool. Now, what I want you guys to do is I want you to learn how to use your phone. I want you to learn how to use that little Siri. Okay, and she's being a smart aleck. Okay, I'm going to have to go home and learn it before Saturday. Now, what I also want you to do, brothers and sisters, I want you to go into your phone. I want you to find the most obnoxious ringtone that you can find. Okay, because it's going to accomplish two things for you. First of all, it's going to help you with a concept and a law that we all have to live by because we live on this earth. The law is this, and you learned it back in junior high school, unless you went to Morgan High and you usually didn't learn it. Okay, that's where I went to high school. None of you even know where Morgan is, do you? Okay, the concept is this. When an object is in motion, it will remain in motion until something of equal or greater value stops it. Guess what your mind is? It's an object in motion. The average person thinks at 400 thoughts a minute. In the little time that you'll be here with me, this hour, you'll have thought over 24,000 thoughts. Whoa. They tell you when you get anxious and you get stressed out and if you're ADD and OCD like I am, I'm not OCD, promise you that, but I am ADD, okay, that your mind clicks up somewhere between 18 and 2,800 thoughts a minute. And so there you are. You're going to leave this conference this afternoon. You're going to get in your car, and there's those thoughts are going to come at you. And they're down, and we're going negative, and you're driving along, and guess what you're thinking? Negative thoughts. When you set your timer, it's going to go off, and it's going to say, wait, timer's up. I'm not going to think about it anymore. Kent said not to. Okay, and when you do that over and over again, especially with an obnoxious ringtone, what will happen is it will then help your mind, and it will be like Pavlov's little dogs, and it will create in you, when he rang the bell, do you remember what it did? It conditioned the dog's minds. it will condition your mind to stop. And it's so wonderful to not have to think sometimes. Okay, and then you go to step five. Step five says, think a totally different, and I want you to write totally different, underline it. Think a totally different positive thought. Now, is there anybody here who is only lost their spouse 2 days ago? No. Okay. Here's what I want you to know. 2 days after you buried your spouse, brothers and sisters, you're not thinking any new thoughts. Guess what you're doing? You're thinking the same thoughts over and over and over again. And as you're thinking those thoughts over and over again, it's going to create a feeling. And what are those feelings when you think those thoughts? They're bad. They're ouch. They're sad. They're horrible. I'm abandoned. I'm lonely. And it's so, I'm just so tired. And what am I going to do? And you're thinking these thoughts over and over and over again. And that's going to create negative emotions. And tomorrow when you think those same thoughts again, how are you going to feel? And 3 weeks from now when you think those thoughts again, how are you going to feel? In 6 months, when you feel those thoughts again, how are you going to feel? Now, what we know is that it's about 18 months to 2 years of feeling those feelings that all of a sudden they will become positive. When you think the thoughts, all of a sudden they will become positive, and you'll remember and you will smile. Right now, not going to happen. It's pretty darn rough. Okay, what I'm asking you to do then is limit the time that you're thinking the negative thoughts. Allow yourself to feel and then stop it, because what it'll do for you then, brothers and sisters, is it will help you. It'll give your mind a rest. It'll give your body a rest. And then you'll begin to heal. That's what we know. Now, I learned the concept from a little boy who was grieving the loss of his father. This little boy was 8 years old. His name was Jake. He was a little boy that was OCD times 1,000. What happened to him is he got up one Saturday morning, and this, him and his father did every Saturday morning. They got up, and he got to have pancakes with Skittles in them because he loved Skittles, and his dad would put Skittles in his pancakes. They got up, and they had pancakes. They went in. They watched cartoons together for a little while, and then his dad said, Jake, I'm going to go for a bike ride. I'll see you guys later, and he got on his bike, and he rode off down the road. 45 minutes later, they had a knock on their door, and it was a highway patrolman letting them know that their dad had run a stop sign on his bicycle and got hit by a cement truck, and he did not live. Little Jake, in his mind, being OCD, he thought two thoughts. The first thought he thought is that anybody that I love that leaves me is going to die. Okay, the second thought he thought is anybody who rides bicycles is going to die, and so he stole a pocket knife from his grandfather one day. And every time he saw a bicycle with nobody on it, he would go over and puncture the tires so they wouldn't die. He got caught and got in big trouble for that one. But what happened with little Jake is that he couldn't leave his mother's side. Everywhere his mother went, he had to be. He went to church, he went to shopping, anywhere she went, he had to be with her. He would allow her to go to the bathroom, but he'd sit outside the door. And if she didn't go quick enough, he was on the door going, you okay? You okay? You okay? You done yet? Okay? And he would knock and knock and night until she come out. Same thing would happen when she showered. He would have to sleep with her. Now, what happened is the summer come to an end, he had to go to school. And as his mother took him off to school, what would happen is that little Jake, okay, would crash and he would burn. And before the mother could get home, the principal's on the line saying, he's curled up in a ball, you better come get him. And after doing that for a couple of weeks, the principal finally said to her, you might want to get him some professional help, and that's where I became involved. Little Jake came in to see me, and I taught him this concept with one exception. Actually, this is exactly what I taught him. But in the old days, I used to have them think of thoughts that made them feel good about the ones that they loved. So I'd have him say, when you start to think the bad thoughts, turn it around and think the good thoughts. And this time, for some unknown reason, I said to Jake, I said, Jake, I want you to go home. And when you find this happening, I want your mom to set the timer. And then what I want you to do is I want you to think about things you love to do. Little Jake came back 10 days later, and they come in, and his mother was a little sweet Mormon mother. And she came in, the first thing she did, she had a plate of cookies and a plate of brownies because she didn't know which one I liked the most. Then she put them down on the counter, and I'm standing there looking at her a little bit weird, and she came over and gave me a kiss on the cheek, and she said, "You saved my life." And I was really embarrassed, because that's not something you ought to do to your therapist. And I said, "What do you mean I've saved your life?" And she says, "He's better." And I looked at her and I said, "Nobody gets better in 10 days. No, I wasn't thinking of money. But I brought him into my office, and I sat him down, and I said, "Jake, what you been doing?" "Well, Mr. Allen, I've been doing what you told me to." And I said, "So what's that?" "Well, I set the timer, and when it's time, okay, I think of things that I like." And I said, "So what you been thinking about?" And he gave me a weird little look, and he said, "Hamburgers." I thought, 8-year-old, yep, that's it. And I says, "Well, is that the only thing you've been thinking about, is hamburgers?" "Oh, no, my favorite thing to think about is going fishing with Grandpa." And then he launched into telling me about him and Grandpa fishing. And then he said, "When we go fishing, we have contests. And whoever catches the biggest fish or the most fish, they win the contest." And I said, "Well, who usually wins?" And he looked at me and says, "Duh, I do." Okay, and I says, "Well, what do you win when you win the contest?" And he says, "I get to pick wherever I want to go for dinner." And I says, "Then you go for hamburgers?" "Hamburgers aren't my favorite food. I like pizza." And then he launched into talking pizza. But what happened with little Jake is he's no longer thinking of his dad getting run over by a semi. What's he thinking about? Something totally different that made him happy. I want you to know that you guys have happiness that comes. Okay? You don't recognize it when you're in the state, but I can guarantee you do. On my phone, and I encourage every one of you to do the same if you have grandchildren, guess what I know? I have 39 new this year, okay, because I just looked it up last night because I wanted to let you know, 39 new videos of my grandchildren that their mothers and dads send me. And I could tell you that right now that if you want to come look at some of my videos, I can make you laugh in seconds because of what they're doing. Okay, put them there because it'll make you smile. And then you go to step six. Step six says, as soon as you can, do something different. Now, because we're out of time, the next piece I'm going to just share with you really, really quick. Okay, the next piece is called Filling Your Reservoirs, written by Dr. Randy Chatlin, a good friend of mine. What you do, brothers and sisters, is you compare yourself to a reservoir. And what we know is that when you're stressed, okay, that your reservoir is draining very, very fast. The very first thing you do is you go in and you identify the things that drain you and stress you. And I want you to know that you can't eliminate stress. But what you do find is that as you go through that process, okay, that what you need to do then is you need to find things to fill your reservoir. And it's things that you stop doing because you're grieving. And go find things that you can do in 5 minutes, in 10 minutes, in 15 minutes, in 30 minutes, in a half a day, in a half, you know, an hour, a half hour, excuse me, a half a day. And you go through and you find those things, and I want you to write them down and put them in the notes of your phone. And when you've got 10 minutes and you don't have anything to do, guess what I want you to do? Okay, look at your phone, go down your list and say, "I can go for a walk." Go down your list and say, "I can text my grandchildren." Go down your list, "I can listen to music." Fill up your time, fill up your mind, fill up your reservoir of things that are good. Okay, now one of the things that I know is that I get really, really nervous and I get almost sick to my stomach when I have to come and talk to people. I knew that I'd have an hour and a half drive from where I live to be here today. I tuned in to my favorite playlist. And I'm rocking out as I'm coming down here today. And I know there was people that were passing me that thought, "He's an old guy, what's he doing?" Okay, but it made me feel good. It gave me energy, it boosted me up. Because what I wanted to do is I wanted to come here today and give you everything I've got because I love you so much. And I know that if I was more depressed than you, you'd leave here more depressed than I am. Okay, and you have way, way too much. Way important things that you still have to do because you're here. Now, I bear testimony to you, brothers and sisters, that God lives. I bear testimony that your spouses also live. And the day will come very, very shortly for you. Okay, and I say that because I'm talking God's time. God's time says that you live 19 seconds of his time. Most of you here have lived not quite 19 seconds, but you're getting real close. Okay, I figure I've got about 3/8 of a second left. But I know that you'll be joined with them. I promise you that you'll see them, and it'll be a wonderful and happy day, and I bear that testimony in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.